Bruch Rabban to another week of Parsha Insights, or should I say Parshiyos Insights. Of course, it's a double Parsha. So for those who have family in Eretz Yisrael, and you have found that you're sharing Divrei Torah and you're just 1 week off, either you're sharing with your family in Eretz Yisrael and they're thinking like, we read that last week, or they're so excited to share Divrei Torah with you and you're thinking like, but that's not this week's Parsha. So now, Baruch Hashem, we're able to get caught up, as they say. In other words, this week we have a double parsha, Chukas and Balak, in Eretz Yisrael and Tzvalah. It came about because for us, the second day of Shavuos was Shabbos, but that in Eretz Yisrael was Shabbos, so that's when they started to get one parsha ahead. But as they say, we're getting caught up with Chukas and Balak. So Parshiyos, insights each and every week, hopefully we'll take out lessons that could help make us and our Shabbos Kodesh even more meaningful. The Shira said, L'zecha Nishmas U'le'ile Nishmas. Rebecca Basarina and Leon Ben Rachel, may their Neshama Torahs have a Lichta Gan Eden. There is so much to speak out on both Chukas and Balak that the irony is that not only don't we have one Parsha to cover, we have two Parshiyos, and I think that a half a Parsha would be more than enough for an entire Parsha Insights. So I think the only thing we could really do is to try to find one or two things in each of the two Parshiyos that could relate to us, be very, very relevant, and hopefully become better as a result of it. If you take a look, probably one of the most famous things we're familiar with, and it is when Moshe Rabbeinu hits the rock instead of speaking to the rock. If you take a look, Perek Chaf, Pasuk Yud Aleph, it's actually right before Revi'i. The Pasuk says, Vayaches HaSela. Moshe Rabbeinu, having been told to speak to the rock, he struck the rock, and according to many, that was the explanation why he wasn't and couldn't enter Eretz Yisrael, because of that, Vayaches HaSela, hitting the rock and not speaking to it. And countless, countless Mefarshim discuss, how do you explain that he apparently did something that he wasn't supposed to or wasn't told to do, and as a result there was the punishment of not being able to enter Eretz Yisrael? How could we understand that? And there are certainly many, many, many explanations. I just want to take upon ourselves tonight to discuss one. It's brought down, I actually saw it brought down in a number of places. In my father's Atzal has it in a Sefer in my Mordechai. Here I'm quoting from Imre Das of the great Reb Meir Shapiro. Let's first back up and ask ourselves, what was a possible explanation as to why he went ahead and Vayaches HaSela? So as we said, one of the most popular ideas mentioned, and here I'm quoting from Reb Meir Shapiro, he explains, if you take a look at Rashi on Pasuk Yud Beis, on where we speak about Yan lo hemanta li lahagdisheni. Take a look at Rashi and we'll see the explanation that Moshe Rabbeinu really hit the rock so to protect Klal Yisrael in the future. Because there may very well be a time in the future when Bnei Yisrael, meaning people, would disobey the command of Hashem, his command with a capital H. And how angry would that make our Creator that his nation disobeyed him, but a rock that listened to the command of Hashem? In other words, there was a command to go ahead and, based on the word, have water come out. Water should gush out from the rock. If Moshe Rabbeinu would have indeed done as he was supposed to, have spoken to the rock, what would the end result have been? The rock would have brought forth water, and it would have obeyed. By contrast, in the future, Klal Yisrael couldn't obey the words of Hashem when a rock could. Imagine the way that would make Klal Yisrael look and seem, and cause the Ribbono Shel Olam to feel. So he wanted to protect Bnei Yisrael in the future. Because as we said already twice, if he would have hit it, then the rock would have listened. By contrast, a rock could listen, but people can't. An inanimate object has the ability to listen to a command, but a person can't? A medaber? Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want there to be that kitrug, so to speak, that prosecution against Klal Yisrael. So he did something like hitting the rock. This way, if the rock did the water coming out, it was not because it obeyed a command, but because it was hit. And this way, it would protect the future and the dignity and the standing of Klal Yisrael, as we said, that it couldn't be said against them. They couldn't do what a rock did, and therefore he hit it to go ahead and to protect his people in the future. Now, if you stop there, that's extraordinary, because the price that he paid vis-a-vis not being able to enter Eretz Yisrael and to lead Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, Moshe makes Yeshua Machris, it was led by Yeshua, not by Moshe, and the enormity of what it means not being able to enter and to live in Eretz Yisrael. One of the primary reasons given the ability, then you could fulfill all the mitzvahs hakliyas ba'aretz. Many more mitzvahs on a higher level. And Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to give all of that up and suffer the punishment so as not to make a yid, or in this case, Klal Yisrael, simply stated, look bad. Now that's unbelievable self-sacrifice. So as I mentioned to you earlier, there's a fabulous proof that my father Zatzal brings down in his Sefer, and I see brought down in the Imre Das from Reb Meir Shapiro as well. It is an absolute gem. Maybe well known, but I'll quickly repeat it. If you take a look, that which we say on Shmini Atzeres, Tfilas Geshem, so you know how moving and stirring Tfilas Geshem is, and we ask the Ribbono Shel Olam in six different stanzas, which follows a pattern of 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, in terms of the last words, Bavurei Altimna Mayim, Bitzitkoi Choyin Chashras Mayim, and that's repeated three times. In other words, we're asking, please remember for the sake of their righteousness and grant us abundant water. And that's the way we start, or we say, Tfilas Geshem on Shmini Atzeres. Take a look at the three stanzas, number 2, 4, and 6. All of which end with that refrain, b'tzidkei choyim chashras mayim, which means that for the sake of his or their righteousness, please be merciful and grant us abundant water. Who was it that we're saying in his, in their, whose? Take a look at number 2, take a look at number 4, take a look at number 6. And number 2 is the schus of Yitzchak. And you know that because it says in the Shchus of the one who was born with the words, Yukach na ma'at mayim, which is, of course, a reference to Avram doing the chesed with the three malachim, and then Yitzchak being born, and then, of course, Yitzchak on his way to the Akedah, and Satan forming a river, a body of water, to try to get Avram and Yitzchak not to want to proceed, and yet, of course, they prevailed, they went through towards Akedah Yitzchak. So there it says in the schus of Yitzchak and his extraordinary self-sacrifice, b'tzidkei choyim chashas mayim, let there be abundant water. Makes a lot of sense. Now let's go to the last one, which would be the sixth stanza, and that's the one that said in reference of the Yud Beis Shvatim, the 12 tribes, once again referencing their self-sacrifice, of course referring to their going into the Yam. Again, we're looking for self-sacrifice regarding water. And just as he or they displayed self-sacrifice with water, please make sure then to grant us abundant mercy and give us water, as Yitzchak did when he had the challenge with the body of water on the way to the Akedah. So too the Shneim Asar Shvatim, as it says, as they passed through the Yamsu. In other words, we know they were willing to jump in, and they had the Amuna, they had the Bitachon, they went through the Yamsuf. So there as well, it's understandable. B'tzidkam, in their righteousness, please grant us abundant mercy. Each of those, both Yitzchak and the Shvatim, doing something extraordinary with water, measure for measure, mida k'neged mida, give us abundant water. But what's the middle one, the fourth stanza? That's a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu certainly had many things in his life that revolved around water, just looking around at the sold-out crowd in Gana Rio. I'm sure there are many that are listening live as you hear these words, and Baruch Hashem, the countless numbers that hear it when it's sent out. So why don't you participate for a moment and tell me what would be one of those obvious times that Moshe Rabbeinu's life involves water? Right away, in the basket, and indeed that's what it says. Remember the one who was in the Tevas Goyma, that little basket, and he was saved from the water, as well as the one who was the Hishketzoin Mayim, who was a shepherd to go ahead and to water and to give water to the sheep and sustenance, one after the other. Moshe's relationship with water makes sense. And then you come to the last one. And please remember the fact that Al Haselaha Vayetsu Mayim, he hit the rock and water came out. He hit the rock and water came out, and then the very next words are Bitzitkoi Choin Chashras Mayim. Because of that righteousness of Moshe Rabbeinu, grant us the mercy of abundant water. Coming out of the river in the basket, I understand. Feeding and tending to the sheep with water, I understand. But he hit the rock, and that's the course that should give us abundant mayim? Which seemed totally counterintuitive. If anything, that's a negative, not a positive. But says Rav Meir Shapiro so beautifully, according to what we said to start the shir, why did he hit the rock? To protect our dignity. And oh, he was willing to give up so very much. The punishment. You've been to Eretz Yisrael. You've been. How many times you've been to Eretz Yisrael? Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to give up going and living in Eretz Yisrael and all that would entail for one reason: to protect the dignity by comparison of a fellow Yid. And that's what we mean in the tefillah, in that stanza of Tfilas Geshem. Al Haselaha, he hit the rock. And why did he hit the rock? Why did he hit the rock? He hit the rock to keep our dignity intact. So by contrast, we wouldn't look terrible. A rock could do what we couldn't. And he suffered by losing so much. In that schus, in that incredible righteous self-sacrifice of what he was willing to give up to protect the dignity of another Yid. Please, Rebbeinu Shleilim, grant us abundant water. And I think the takeaway lesson from that concept is just so obvious. It's one thing that we talk about not being malbim pnei chaveri derabim, but there are so many occasions that we have the ability to protect the dignity of a fellow Yid, to do something to make sure at the very least that they're not embarrassed, and that we do everything possible to really care about their neshama as much as we would ours. I remember years ago hearing an extraordinary story. This is the way I heard this story about the legendary Rosh Hashiva, Reb Manas Mendel. Just an incredible story. As I said, there may be different variations. This was the way that I heard the story. Talk about caring about someone's dignity. There was a boy who was one of many children in his yeshiva in Brooklyn. And the mother passed away, and the young father was raising all of these children on his own. And Reb Manas Mendel noticed, I guess from the window in his office, that on many days when the boys had their lunch break and everybody would in turn take their lunch and open up the bag or whatever it is, I guess this was before it was a given that there had to be hot lunches. And I'm not getting into whether, well, let's not discuss it. But there was a day that it was before hot lunches. People made lunches and the children ate the lunches. And he noticed very peculiar that this young boy, this Yosem, every day he would notice the same scene. He would open up his lunch bag, look inside, and then just put it in the garbage basket outside in the yard. Now, besides the fact it meant that the boy was going hungry, Amri said he's a yosim, but what peculiar behavior. So one day, he called in the boy, and he asked the boy, he told him that he noticed this behavior. He asked him for an explanation. So sheepishly, the boy answered, as I told you, that his mother passed away, his father was raising he and his many siblings, and very often in the morning, it was hard for the father to make a different lunch every day or for the different children. And so almost always the easiest thing that you want to slap and put together would be take some bread, put inside some peanut butter and jelly, put the two pieces of bread together, probably is the quickest thing to make, and that's what they all got. And that was their lunch pretty much every day. His siblings were okay with that. He, unfortunately, really didn't like, or perhaps even more than didn't like, couldn't eat. He just didn't like peanut butter and jelly. But he told his Rosh Hashiva, Reb Manas Mendel, I don't have the heart to tell that to my father because it's so difficult beyond what he's already doing, and I should start ordering an exclusive catered lunch of what I want each and every day. I don't like it, so I don't tell him, but I put it in the wastebasket, I throw it away, I do go hungry, but I don't have the heart to tell my dear Chasheva father, who's doing such a peculiar and extraordinary job, that I don't like peanut butter and jelly. So on the spot, the Manas Mendel turned to the boy and he said, you know, that's interesting. I really feel for you, and I could feel because I sometimes go through a similar situation. And he explained, he asked the boy, do you like cold cuts? Do you like a good, you know, salami, turkey, corned beef sandwich? The boy was salivating. Do I like it? That's like a dream come true to get a good geschmack, a festa, a cold cut sandwich for lunch. The modest man then looked at the boy and said, so maybe you can help me. Often my wife makes that for me for lunch. And I don't particularly care for it, but I don't have the heart. I don't want to tell her that I don't like it. I don't want to tell her that it's not something that I enjoy. And yet I keep getting the lunch time and time again. So how about if we make a partnership, a shutfus? Because I like peanut butter and jelly, and you clearly like cold cuts. How about if we don't tell either, and every day I'll take your lunch and you take my lunch? Is that something that works for you? And of course, the boy left beyond on cloud nine. Now, moreover, Abaisai, I do not know if Mrs. Mandel did or didn't make often cold cut sandwiches, but one thing I do know from that day on, she pretty much made them all the time. And again, as I said, that's the way I heard the story, and obviously Reb Manas Mendel, the gadol that he was, felt that those were the words that needed to be said to help the boy out in his situation. I merely bring you but one example of our gedolim, of caring about someone's dignity. Both the boy who cared enough about his father and the Rosh Hashiva who cared enough about the boy, thinking about someone else. And that's why in Tfilas Geshem we say, Alasela Hoch, the only reason he did it was to protect and care and be there for someone's dignity. Now, Ribbono Shel Olam, you're not going to grant us mercy with abundant water when we behave that way? And if time would allow it, we could go with story upon story where people have done things to protect someone's dignity. As I said, Chukas deserves not one Parsha insights, but countless. Let's for a few moments, though, turn to Parshas Balak, what might very well be one of the most powerful psukim in all of Balak. Of course, this was Bilam, his first curse, which was actually his first blessing. And what were the words that came out in Perakov Gimel Pasuk Tes? Hen on levodod yishkoin. Uvagoyim lo yischashav. Wow, listen to those words of Bilam. His first bracha, I repeat again, Perakav Gimel Pasuk Tes. Henom levodad yishkoim. Behold, I see the Jews, they're a nation, they're a people that will dwell in solitude of Agoyim lo yischashav. They won't be reckoned amongst the nations. Rashi explains what that means is that when the final reckoning is made to punish the nations, Klal Yisrael will not be included among them. That's the pshat that Rashi gives to simply understand the pasuk. However, I know that many mefarshim, countless mefarshim, bring down the following pshat, and it is so true, Meirai v'Rabbeisai, all times, but certainly with what Klal Yisrael has been going through, and most recently with different events and deals that were made. Let me explain. The Svarim explained the words "hen on levodad yishkan b'algoyim lo yischashav" to mean, especially since who were these words coming from? They were actually emanating directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu into Bilam's throat for a message for us. And what was the message for us? Hen om levodad yishkoim. You have to be a people and a nation that dwell in solitude. We don't do something just because everyone else might be doing it. Their standard does not mean, therefore, it becomes our standard. Uvagoyim lo yischashav. You are not to consider in your decision-making of right and wrong, what we listen to, how we write, how we act, where we go, how we dress. Sometimes we're a nation that's on our own. We're the only one. And no, uvagoyim lo yischashav, we don't have to, nor should we take into account the rest of the world and the decision making, and they do it this way. If it's right and it's moral and it's yashar and it's a thing to do, we do it. In a world where the moral compass is not broken, it's shattered. You know that. In fact, I remember seeing years ago beautifully, that's why it says it up in A Yisrael, the word hen on. Hen, hey, nun means, behold, we are a nation who lives in solitude, meaning that very often we do things on our own. It's represented by the letters hen, hey, nun. Why? Because in the Aleph days, when you deal with Aleph to Yud, or I should say Aleph to Tes, and then Yud to Tzadi, every letter has a pair, except which one? Aleph pairs with Tes and makes 10. Beis with Ches to make 10. Gimel with Zion, 3 and 7 to make 10. And finally, Dalet and Vav, 4 and 6 to make 10. The only letter without a pair is the Hey. Now let's try it out with the units of 10. Yud and Sadi, 10 and 90 is 100. I'm just doing one in each direction, forward, backwards. Kof and Pei, 20 and 80 is 100. Lamed and Ayin, 100. And finally, Mem and Sama, 40 and 60, 100. The only letter that's left in isolation is the letter Nun. The only two letters that are left in isolation are the He and the Nun. And that's Klal Yisrael, Hen Om. We're a nation that sometimes feels so alone. We're a nation that sometimes feels so alone. Just what we've been going through the last few weeks. This nation's there for us, that nation's there for us, and it's this one, and the deal, and then not the deal, and a deal that turned on us, and a deal that everything, and hen om, we're a nation that lives by itself. It is a reminder that we have nowhere, and on no one to whom to rely. No one other than the Ribbono Shel Olam. Hen on. We are a nation that's alone, but that comes with a responsibility. It's a pachad. Stories that we hear of anti-Semitism around the world, Rachmana Litzlan, it is frightening. It's mamash a pachad. Hen on, hen on, hen on. We are alone. But we're not. Ein lanu al mi lishoin el avinu shebashamayim. We put our focus and our strength and our belief only in the Ribbono shel Olam. In no person, no leader, no nation, period. In the Ribbono shel Olam. And so it comes with a tremendous responsibility. Just because the rest of the nations have turned and do things a different way, that's not the way we have our moral compass. Is it right? Is it Yashuv? Is it correct? Is it going to bring about a glorification of Hashem's name? Then the answer is yes, we do it. And that brings me to the final pshat of tonight, which is an absolute gem. And maybe it ties the whole shir together. Because if you think about it, Hashem has allowed us to survive all the years. Through everything that we have survived and through all those who have turned on us. We are truly hen We are dwelling alone. The nations have turned on us. What might be the secret or causing us this great ability? I want to conclude the shir with a pshat. Pile, 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 ployim. From Rebbe Chanan Wasserman, Hashem Yimkom Damo. The great Baranovich Rosh Hashiva Rebbe Chanan Wasserman says a beautiful pshat. He says, if you take a look at this pasuk, look at it inside as I say it. We are referred to by one title, they are referred to as by another. How are we referred to? We are referred to as a am. An Am, he says, really is called a people. How are they referred to? As Goyim. Goyim is a nation. What, pray tell, is the difference between an Am and Goyim? I'm not talking about a Yid or not a Yid. So an Am means a people. Goyim means a nation. In this pasuk that speaks about our difficulties and simultaneously our greatness, we are called an Am. They are called Goyim. Why? Magnificently says Rabbi Chanan, the primary difference between them, a Am, it's a people. That means it's a cohesive group. They have a common language, a common tongue, a culture, a mode of life. They may not necessarily live all in one particular land. They may very well be scattered, may arba kanfei sa'aretz, but you're still called a people. You're an am. You have a common goal. Contrast that with a goy or goyim. It's a nation. That, says Rabbi Chanan, is a geographical term. It means that they may not have a commonality or anything of cohesiveness, but they are geographically living as goyim, meaning geographically together. Take a look at Klal Yisroel. Zokra Bochanan. If you take a look for centuries, we were, on one hand, we were able to remain an Am, a people, scattered throughout the world, all of the different funereal events that we suffered, but we remained united as a cohesive group, or certainly having a culture, a language, a mode of life. That's the way it should be. And even if you were not at that time a Goyim, meaning to say you were not geographically all together, of course that's what we yearn for. Of course we yearn to all be able to go to Eretz Yisrael. But why do we yearn to be able, as we started this year, Moshe Rabbeinu's desire, to go to Eretz Yisrael, because being united in the land, Goyim, as a nation in a land, will bring about an even greater Am, a greater people. But our greatness has been that throughout the millennia, although that's what we want for the future, we have not been privileged to be a geographic nation, but we have been an Am. We've been able to survive and we've been able to thrive because we're a people, we're an Am. And that, says Rabbi Chanan, is something we are alone in. Because for everyone else, they need to have the geographic location to be together, and then perhaps, ulai efshar, maybe, there will be the rest of the cohesiveness. But we try to reinforce and strengthen our ties of our moral compass, our language, our religion, that keeps us alive to achieve those great levels, even when we are an Am and not one of the Goyim. And that's the way Rabbi Chanan says to read the Pasuk. Hen Am Levavad Yishkoin. We alone are able to thrive as an Am, meaning a people where we have to remain united and cohesive in serving Hashem. Uva Goyim. But to those nations out there where it's all about geographic location, lo yischoshe, what's important to us is meaningless to them. Now that's a pshat. And maybe that's been the secret of our success. That as nations and people and leaders do turn on Klal Yisrael, or should I say on Am Yisrael, it's our job to remain an Am. An Am may not have the beauty of the Goyim, i.e. the geographic cohesive location, but we have something that brings us together. Our common goal, our unity, our language, our culture, our mode of life, all of which have to be to serve our Creator. And then, of course, as a nation, or I should say as a people, we hope one day to be considered one of the Goyim, one of the nations, in the sense we do have the geographic location that Am Yisrael is able to reunite in Eretz Yisrael. And we end the shir the way we started. Moshe Rabbeinu was not able to lead Am Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, precisely because it was so important to him to care for a fellow Yid and protect our dignity. He was willing to take that punishment. We try as well to protect the dignity, to be there for each other. Let's take out of these two extraordinary parshiyos to be the best Am people that we can, dispersed throughout lands, people turning on us. All of that is true. Hen, we are alone. But we could remain alone as a vibrant Am, a people. And in the schus of being Am Yisrael, may we be zoicha to the Gula Shalema to be geographically in Eretz Yisrael. Thank you.